The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM Sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and joining me in the studio this week, Steve Turvett from the KM Sports Desk, and our special guest, Danny Kedwell, the Ebbsfleet striker, also formerly, of course, Gillingham, AFC Wimbledon, and many more clubs that I'm sure we'll discuss between now and the end of our podcast this afternoon. Danny, great to have you with us. Thanks very much for coming in. First things first, we've got to talk about this season, I guess, with Ebbsfleet and how things have gone. You're just outside the playoff places. You must be pretty pleased with the way it's gone now.
Yeah, it's. I think we had a tough start, really. I think we had that last year as well. We didn't start well, but I think there was more draws than there was wins. But no, we've picked up just before Christmas, like we did a bit like last year. So we just got to keep going and see where we end up at the end.
We can't have you here without talking about the last game for Ebbsfleet. Obviously, no game at the weekend due to the FA Trophy, but the one before, the 3-3 draw at Chesterfield. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, I haven't, no. It was a bit mad and a bit... I had seen, obviously, crowds run on the pitch, especially coming for players, especially our goalkeeper, no matter what he was time-wasting or what, but that's just football. Goalkeepers do it. And I think we've had it plenty of times when we're losing a game, and you just got to manage your supporters, really, and I don't think they did. It was a bit crazy, and obviously to get a penalty at the end to go and win the game, it was a bit more frustrating that we should be going and winning the game, especially with 3-0 up, and then getting that at the end gives us a bit of a lifeline, and unfortunately we didn't score.
What was it like for you as players being on the pitch towards the end of the game when obviously the crowd were, it looked like they were going to come on, and then obviously they did rush on after they got the equaliser? What was that sort of feeling like?
It's obviously not right. I don't know, I was just in the emotion of like just adrenaline put me through, like, what are you doing on here? Like, do you know what I mean? You just want to go on there and just grab them and throw them, do you know what I mean? It's just like, what are you doing?
You don't worry for your safety?
No, I weren't worried. There probably was people, but I'm the sort of person, it don't affect me, that sort of stuff. But you just got to, like, it's worry about your own players. You know what I mean? It's like protecting Ash, who was on the floor. There was other players. I don't know how, like you said earlier, that if we did score that at the end, what would it have ended up? Would there have been more people? Mm. And then obviously that would have been a bit more intimidating and a bit scary, do you know what I mean? So I'll just... wouldn't know what that ended up would have been.
When it goes through the player's mind, how does it get to that stage though? How do the players sort of like try to process what's going on? I mean, you can see them on the barrier, can't you, by the edge of the pitch, and you're thinking about it before? Do you realise it's going to happen?
No, not really. Like I say, that's the first time I've ever seen it. Obviously, over the years I've played, there's always been the odd one or something like that, but not that many. And like I say, it's, if there was a lot more, it's a bit different, isn't it? It's like, that is very intimidating. And then you go into the next game, like you say, it can affect people. Do you know what I mean? And even in their performance, I don't know. Fancy this no more. Do you know what I mean? Like, fans getting aggressive, especially Ash, the amount of stick he's been getting lately, that could affect him. But lucky enough, he's a strong-minded man. Do you know what I mean? So... yeah, like I say, it's not right, is it?
No, I mean, we've heard from Nathan here, obviously in print and online, about what's been going on this season. What's your take on it, and what's the players' sort of support mechanisms almost in the dressing room for him?
To be honest, we ain't really spoke about it because we take like a bit of banter of it to make it a bit more easy for us, do you know what I mean? It's like...
is that the easiest way to deal with it?
Yeah, I think it is, especially in a change room. If you take it too personal, it might affect him, it might... So we just like try and banter with him, and Ash is a... he has a laugh, do you know what I mean? And he's took it on the chin very well, to be honest. But like I said earlier, you don't know what he's thinking in his own head, do you know what I mean? It's like... It could affect him, but like I say, he's a strong-minded lad anyway, so he'd be fine.
Have you heard some of the abuse that he's got? I mean, do you hear it? I mean, obviously, maybe when
I heard the one at Boreham Wood, because obviously I'm up the other side of the pitch, so I don't really hear. I just hear what people say. But The Bournemouth one, because I come back for a corner and I heard them saying it, what they were saying, and it weren't right. So I'm not surprised that Ash did what he did, to be honest, because I don't think many people would have took that.
We sort of read and heard a lot in the media recently about abuse from the terraces and the stands, whether it's Raheem Sterling at Man City and the incident at Chelsea or stuff with Ash, where he really seems to become a bit of a target. Do you think it's just that we're talking about it more now, you know, how football players are treated, or has it got worse?
To be honest, I think it was worse when I was even younger. The amount of abuse I used to get. But it depends how you take it. Like me, I'll just shove it off and just laugh about it. But I think nowadays, with more of the social media stuff, I think it gets a bit out of there too much, out of context. Do you know what I mean? It's not... In my days, it was... You get abused off the side. The amount of like, things I get thrown at me on the side, I just laugh it off, and it's nothing of it. But now, there's all this social media. People will put it out there. They video it. You see it, and then it makes it a big, massive thing over it. Do you know what I mean? So, and then, obviously, words in there get muddled up. That he said this, he said that, and it ain't been said that, and they have said it, and they get away with it. Do you know what I mean? So it's more these days, I think, the social media side of it, that it gets brought out there to a lot of people's attentions.
I suppose that's been one of the biggest changes in football since you started playing to now, that social media, it wasn't really around at all, and it's become, you know, such a big part of it now. You're on Twitter, you're on Instagram. How has that kind of impacted just your career? Because you're contactable, people can praise you when things are going well, and they can have a go at you if they don't like you.
And listen, it's like I say earlier, some people can take it. I've had criticism from fans of me when I first come here, and I see it all, but that don't affect me. That pushes me. And I think, like I say, there's people out there with that minded sort of thing where it don't affect them, but other people it will affect, and it could cost their careers, no matter how much ability they got. And I think that's the main problem with social media. You see what people are saying, and it ain't obviously nice for some of them. So,
Where did you get the worse abuse? We say where did it affect you more?
Like I say, it just don't bother me. I'll just get on with it. Yeah. It's part of football. It's fans, isn't it? They want to get in your head to make you perform. Well, like I always say to lads when we're in the change room, like boys who get abused before. Listen, if they're abusing you, that means you're a good player. Simple. Because if they leave you alone, that means they don't rate you. So that's what I say to people, and that's what I think in my head. Why are you coming for me? Well, it must be because I'm a good player. Because otherwise you wouldn't. But they're offended from you. They're you're a threat to that team, who they're supporting.
To go back to the football at Ebbsfleet, the run that you guys have been on has been terrific. You had the defeat up at Fylde, but other than that, you're on a really good unbeaten run. What's been the key to that? Obviously, Gary's come in and Daryl's moved on. You just seem to have been able to put these results together.
Yeah, it's like I say, I think everyone had their part as well. Do you know what I mean? I've been in, I've been out, I've been rested, and Cheeky's been scoring, Cody's been scoring, I've been scoring when I've been playing. So I think there's a balance there where we're all like fresh as well. Like I say, new Gary's come in and done brilliant, and we just got to make sure we keep doing it. And when a new manager comes in, you know, it makes an effect on players that they're playing for their shirt more, because obviously a new manager's coming in, you've got to prove him right. Like I say, we just got to keep going. He's come in, and we've got a style of play. We know what we're doing. We know where the ball's going every time. So it ain't that we're playing through, or we know what we're going to do before a game. And I think at the minute it's working.
So you just simplified it a little bit?
Yeah, it's just more simplified. Just like I say, we know where the ball's going now, and it ain't pretty, but it's
getting it works.
Points and it's working. So sometimes it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't, and at the minute it's working for us.
Well, Gary Hill, I mean, you obviously have known him around, but presumably you haven't come across him as such. What's he like in the dressing room immediately before a game? Because he strikes me as the sort of chap, you know, he's really going to motivate his team, really get them going.
Yeah, he does. He's quiet, to be fair. He says his point, and then he'll stand back and watch. And he'll be in the change room with the lads. He won't move. So he's in and about with us as well, which is good. He don't just do his team talk and walk out, and then you don't see him before you kick off. He stays there with you, and he's talking to you and things like that. And he I don't know. He just watches people, what they're doing, I don't know, and then they come and talk to you, which is a good thing. Like, I've never seen it, which I quite like it.
Well, different managers have different approaches, don't they? What sort of manager gets the best out of you, Dan? I mean, you know, what sort of manager who did you play your best football under, do you think? Or who got that extra 10% out of you?
I think, to be honest, I don't... See, me, I'm my own person, you know what I mean? It's like, a manager can motivate me, but I don't need that much motivating, because all managers know what I'm like. I motivate myself, on the pitch, off the pitch. And I'm honest with them. And when I'm not right, I'll tell them I'm not right. So there's always been a nice bond with every manager, really. And I look back now, obviously, over the years, and I can't say, apart from really Grays, I didn't really feel it there at all. But all the other clubs, I've actually done well, so I can't say that there's been a specific manager that I could say. But Martin Allen changed me a bit. He was a very good motivator.
I was going to talk about Mad Dog, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you won the league at Jules when he was in charge there, and it was a great season for you guys. When he first came in, what was your first impression of Mad Dog, as he's known? You know, was he mad? You know,
yeah, it was mad but funny, because at first I didn't like him at all. I was like, I can't deal with him. Like, he's just too on it. Like, and the things he said. But I think once you got to know him, and after a few months, you knew he was only helping you. And Martin's one of them. If you put it on the field for him and in training, he loves you. If you don't, then it's going to be hard. Which, like I say earlier, I always motivate myself. So, and he pulled me after a couple of months and he went, listen, I was hard on you because I know you're a good player. And I knew I can give you that extra 10% and look what you're doing for me. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Wasn't one of the early ones you did? Didn't you go to the swimming pool, outdoor swimming pool?
That's strange, yeah.
In pre-season?
Yeah, things like that. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, what the hell are we doing here? Jumping in freezing cold water with, like, it was even nappies in it. It hadn't even been cleaned. And I think there was a few people more worried about their health than what he was. But he jumped in and he was, like, just in his pants. And he was like, who's coming with me?
He was first in?
He was first in, yeah. Brilliant. He said, right, who's with me? If you're not with me, then obviously you're not going to be in my plan. So, and everyone jumped in. So,
what was the key to that side that won the title under Martin Allen in 2011-12? You know, why was it such a good side?
I think the togetherness in the group was superb. Like I say, we had a way of playing, and it's just one of them seasons where everything just clicked. He had us all on it. He done everything right off the pitch. When there was, like, obviously there was a lot of experiences in there where he looked after us. He'd give us days off, like, when other boys are in. So it was, we always come into games and train him fresh. And everything just fell into place. And, like, listen, the quality we had in that team anyway was always going to be there. But I think off the pitch side of things, like, I've been to clubs when, like, even the last couple of years, I was training every day. And I was coming to Saturday and I was like a bit, God, I feel a little bit lethargic here.
So having a day off here or there, or just somebody saying,
yeah,
he just managed
the older pros very well. I mean, we wouldn't have a day off, but we'd just be in the gym, or we'd have steam, saw him in the pool or something like that. But the others would be training, we'd be sat behind, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just getting our legs in, and then Tuesday we'd go again. And then we'll see, you have your Wednesdays off, Thursday, Friday. It was very little for us. Like, the young boys who have a game at the end, we just go in. It was like, so come Saturday, all the older pros over 30 were like proper raring to go. And that's why we had really no injuries, things like that, because he looked after us often.
Yeah, just managing the squad.
Yeah.
And obviously, Jules was more than just another team, another club. You know, it was a real big part of you growing up. And and it took a big kind of offer from them to prize you away from AFC Wimbledon. Yeah. Firstly, how big a decision was that? Because you'd had two promotions in 3 years with Wimbledon. You were going up into the Football League, having scored that penalty at the City of Manchester Stadium. Yeah. And then Gillingham came in, so that must have been a biggie for you.
Yeah, it was really, really tough, to be honest. Like I say, I was watching Gillingham from when I was 4 years old. in the stand, and I watched them all until I was 16, 17, until I started playing properly on Saturdays. So it was very difficult. I did have four or five other teams that I could have gone to, and I've turned them down. Like Wimbledon, no, I said no, I'm going to stay here. And then I remember I was in Florida on holiday, and my agent rang me and said Gillingham were coming for you, and I was like, oh no. Like, really? He was like, yeah.
He was like, because you knew you had to make a real decision on this one.
God, this is going to be like the worst 4 days of my life. I had 4 days left. I was like, what do? And he's like, he needs a decision now because I need to get another striker in. And they've come in for you, they've offered money, but Wimbledon are saying no. And I said no to four clubs. Gillingham's like my club. It's the only club I'd ever would have left Wimbledon for. So it was a big decision. I made my mind up in 2 days, and then the chairman rang me and said, look, I'm not saying that you can go, but you're going to have to put a transfer request in, which I really didn't want, because I knew what it had come with the fans and things like that. So I had to put a transfer request in, and it was just, and then they agreed, and then obviously I was come back finally a day later, I was in signing.
I'm intrigued as to what the other offers were. You had other offers before Gillingham came in, or other clubs were interested?
I had Crawley, and I can't remember. It was three others. It was quite a few, but obviously they weren't finalised. But they were like in talks and asking if I fancy it and things like that.
And they never tempted you?
Nah, they never tempted me one bit. I was like, obviously scoring that goal, and it was probably one of the best days that you could ever think of. That day was unbelievable. Obviously for what has happened through their career, getting their club taken away from them, and then starting again, and obviously getting them back to in the Football League, was, you never forget that. Do you know what I mean? So it was so difficult. It was so hard. It was. My missus always said it was the worst holiday I've ever had in the last 4 days. So in the first 10 days were unbelievable. The worst. It was the worst because my mind weren't there. Do you know what I mean? I was just like, what do I do? I don't know. I was like, no.
And given that's what Gillingham meant to you, that persuaded you to leave Wimbledon, when it came to leaving Gills, when Ebbsfleet showed their interest, was that equally tough for you?
Yeah, I think that was a bit different, because I didn't get on with Peter Taylor, to be honest. He had his way. I don't know, I just weren't connected to him. He's a lovely man, don't get me wrong, but in the footballing, it just weren't going how I wanted it to go. And it was like in and out, and then I think he went, and then I think Lovell, Essie and Darren took over for a bit in between that.
I remember there was little things like, I think he took you off penalties, or he said he was going to take you off penalties.
He pulled me in and trying to tell me how to take a penalty, knowing that I scored on that Saturday, but because he saved it and it come out and I rebound, I think it was against Plymouth. It was just like them sort of things. He was like trying to put me down, and I was just like, he don't want me here. He don't want me at all. But the more frustrating thing is I left, and then a week later Justin come in. And obviously I had Justin before, so it was like, and he was like, have you signed? You don't sign. I was like, oh God, I've done it. Yeah. I've done that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that was. I don't think that weren't more with the club, because obviously club's my life. Do you know what I mean? I've had it there all my life.
Yeah, just saying before, the relationship with the manager can be great, and if it's not,
exactly. I even before I signed my 2 year deal before Martin, I could have gone back to Wimbledon. I had an offer from Wimbledon to come back, and I turned that down because I thought, do I go back there? And I'm not as good as what I've done for them, and then your status is gone. Do you know what I mean? It's like, ah. He shouldn't have come back. Do you know what I mean? So Gillingham just swayed me again. I was just like, no, I'm staying here. I love it here. I'm going to finish. I wanted to finish my career here. Like I said, when I first signed, I want to go to the end and then just say, right, that's me done. But like I say, manager comes in, don't fancy her. I was gutted. And then, like I say, I was going to go back to Portsmouth. I was driving up to Portsmouth to sign. And I got halfway, and then Peter Varney rang me and he said, look, come down and don't go yet, come down and have a chat. And I was like, it's Conference South. I was like, I still think I can play Football League. Like, and he went, just come down, like, we've got some big plans. I said, all right, okay. So I rung the manager, the secretary, I think. I was like, sorry, I can't come.
So you're still in the car at this
I'm
point?
Still in, yeah, I'm in traffic. I can't get there. So I end up turning around.
Motorway's triple. I'm not going to make it.
And then I spoke to Pete, and the plans that I was seeing, it just really drew me in. And I was like, put things together. Like, my boys are playing football. They have to go to... I have to take them training nearly every night. Do I want to be going up down Portsmouth every day? And got my kids, you know what I mean? It was hard work.
Given how well you've played since then, that you're still performing at a high level, you've scored 60 plus goals for Ebbsfleet, have there been any times when you think, oh, I wish I'd stayed in the league to see if I could still do it?
Yeah, I always say now I could still play in the league, and I still believe in that now. People say that he's gone now, do you know what I mean? But I know what I do in the game, there's not many around, and I always still believe it. Listen, if I didn't believe in it, I'd be giving up football, simple. So in my own head, I've still got that drive in me to go and play as high as I can.
And I think we did a piece last season, you said that stepping up from Conference South to what is now the National League actually suits you better, the higher level, it suits your game better.
I always said that the higher I go, the better I find it. And it's like I say, if I'm still, I think I'm fifth in the league, top goal scorer now at the minute, and I've got it. Well, if I played the last three games, I'll be up there, probably third or fourth. I'm still enjoying it. I'm still scoring. Like I say, I've still got that drive to go as high as I can.
That word motivation that you talked about earlier, we'd see you in the 88th, 89th minute of a game, still tracking back, putting tackles in. Where do you get that kind of inner sort of desire to keep going in a game? And also, you come to the summer and you've got that drive and that willingness to go again and put yourself through another 9 or 10 months of that. Is that just who Danny Kedwell is? Is that just your makeup?
That is literally just me. I've always been like it. I think as well, like I had, like football nowadays, it's more academy boys coming through. It's more technically, it's more this. But they ain't got the heart and the power. Like, I've been in changing rooms where academy boys have come in, and it's like, mate, you ain't got the drive. You'll be out of here within a month, 2 months, and going down the leagues.
You can tell that.
You can tell. Yeah, you just ain't got that. When you lose, it don't affect them. It's like, no, we lost. Like an academy, they don't play for nothing until they're older.
Mm.
So when they come into men's football that was competitive, it's like that feeling don't hurt them as much as it did when I was younger.
Is that because you've come into football through a different route? You know, you were never part of an academy?
I never had a part of academy. I was in playing grassroots. And obviously in them days, it was at seven, you was playing for competition. You were playing in leagues, playing 11 a side straight away. So that drive and competitiveness in me, that willing to win, to want to push yourself as hard as you can, I think it's come through the steps I've had and the life I've had, to be honest. Like, from when I was 16 up to 18, I was a nightmare, do you know what I mean? I got banged up, GBH, 4 months in prison, and then I come out, and then I just thought, sorry, I'm done with football. I just went out with my mates, got drunk all the time. And then until I met my wife and had a baby, that was it. I thought, I can do this. I'm going to push myself and drive myself. And lucky enough, she sorted me out, and I'm up there now and still playing and enjoying it.
That's a real major experience to go through. Your life probably could have gone a completely different way.
Yeah, exactly. And it was going that way. And people used to tell me, you've got so much ability, Dan. Like, what are you doing? Why are you frowning? And I just go, oh, leave off. Do you know what I mean? It was one of them, I don't care, just leave off. I'm just enjoying myself at the minute. Which, listen, I was a young kid. And you can get driven down that side of football and that way. And there's probably loads of, probably thousands we probably don't know about, that they had ability, but they went that route. And like I say, lucky enough, I met my missus and I had a baby, my eldest boy now. It just sorted my life out.
Yeah, how did that change your outlook on life and your football as well?
Yeah, it just sorted me completely. I was just like, now I've got a responsibility in my life, and I need to provide for him, and I don't want to be going out every time and things like that. And so, to be fair, my missus Vicky, she's been magnificent for me, to be honest.
Well, we talk about the impact of managers, but yeah. Meeting the right woman is just as important, isn't it?
It is, and these things people don't see, because if you're not performing, your wife's getting it in the ear hole. They get it more than what manager do or your players.
What now? That happens now.
Yeah, I think anyone. Like when you go through a bad patch, when I was through with at Gillingham with Peter Taylor and that, it was a nightmare for her, because I come home angry, like, and you take it out on her. Do you know what I mean? So your partners and kids, they see it all.
Mm.
So and they've got to try and get a way of you getting you through that. So people don't see that.
And imagine it's the same through issues like, you know, when you were being paid late, you know, whether it was 2 days late, a week late or whatever, that's impacting your family, isn't it? We're not just talking about the playing squad. There's a bigger impact than that.
It does affect you, and it affects its performances. I think last year, like I say, it was happening. And as a group, we got through it together. And that's why we got to the folks. It was happening months before that. So for us as a group, we come in together and said, we give it our all, right? And there was days where we was playing and we had been paid, and 3 or 4 games at one stage, 1 month. So it was good in that way. But like you say, when you get home and you've got your bills to pay and things like that, it affects your life. You're always around with your missus, because listen, what women don't really know, it's like, if I was in a job and I won't get paid, I wouldn't be going in. But it don't like work like football, does it? Do you know what I mean?
Why is it different?
Well, you're in a contract, ain't you? Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I think they get, because we're different, we get paid in a certain month, which is quite early in the month. So they've got to the end of the month to pay you. So you still got to go in. But they don't get that. Do you know what I mean? So it's always communications between you and the family. Mm. And listen, it's sorted now as well, so it's better. But I've never had it in my career. A lot of players have. And I've had that experience now, and we're all right now.
Just to rewind, Danny, on what you just said. Were you talking about when, obviously, you became a dad for the first time, and you met your good lady? Was that at what time? What age were you there? Was that at the Herne Bay days? Was that, or
I met her at the Herne Bay. Yeah. Just literally near the end. But like, even at Herne Bay, I was obviously going out on Friday nights. So I was playing on a Saturday. I was scoring 2-3. I think this is easy. So, I mean, I got 28 goals that year. So it was hard. And then towards the end of that season, I think I was on about 18 goals. And I met her in January. And then I met her, and then she stopped me going. I was indoors with her, like at her house on a Friday, weren't drinking. And I just went from then to the... I got 28 goals. I was like, bloody hell. Maybe this is why.
Wish it had happened sooner, yeah.
I'm thinking I'm doing all right. 14 goals, because normally a striker's like, you get 10 before Christmas. My agent always used to say to me, get 10 before Christmas, you get a move. So like, I was on 14, so I was thinking, God, I'm doing all right here. But obviously, them sort of things is a massive key, and you don't realise. This is the mentality I was in. I didn't know any different.
Opens your eyes to another way of living, another way of doing things.
Yeah, so now it's... That's why, and that's why I'm still going, because I reckon if I was in that way, I wouldn't be playing football. I'd probably given up ages ago. I'd have probably got injuries. I'd probably don't know where I would have been. So, in that sort of sad way, I've looked after myself, and I'm 35 now, and I'm still playing, and I'm still scoring, and still enjoying it, and I feel fit. That's the reasons.
I think there's probably a message there for young lads, isn't there, who love their football, but perhaps other areas of their life aren't quite as they should be.
No, exactly, and they've got to find that way of what helps them. And it's interesting that drink was mine, you know what I mean? It was like, it was something stupid like that, where I could have probably thought of that myself. It didn't need someone to tell me, Dad, come on, you know what I mean, you need to stop going out and going with your mates, you know what I mean? Because I didn't know any different. I was 16, I met my mates, like everyone. You're getting into that mentality, but you don't know any different. I didn't know any different until someone comes to you and goes, look, sort your life out, you've got to, come on, we've got a baby on the way, I've got, do you know what I mean? It's like, and then you do it, and then suddenly you just shoot up. It was quick, it was very quick as well, wasn't it? So,
I mean, how much of you thinks that I wish I'd got hold of myself at 18, because there you know, there's another few years there that you could have gone even higher. You know, would your career have gone even better than it has had you sorted yourself out even earlier?
Yeah, if I'd have sorted myself out earlier, but like I say, I didn't know any different. And the thing was, I was still scoring goals, so I was always thought. But a lot of people now, when I talk to people now, because they can tell me, it was like people come in, they asked about you, and then all their time is, I heard he likes to drink though. He goes out a lot. Oh yeah, yeah, he does, blah blah blah. So that's why people didn't touch her. So I wish they was honest to me then. If they'd have told me, look, listen, Cubs are coming in for you, but they think you're out all the time drinking, people see you out, you're out on a Friday night, you've got a game on a Saturday. Like, I might have even be drinking, do you know what I mean? But I'm just in general that you're out, people have seen you. So why, this is the reason why you ain't pushed on. So I wish they'd have told me then and not now, like now they've finished or they're a bit older now and they ain't in the game anymore.
Mm.
And people, I wish they'd just told me then, because if they'd have told me, I might have literally listened to them and gone that.
And you said to me in the past that you've had to kind of prove people wrong all your life. Just explain that a bit more.
Yeah, always. It's like I say, people that I used to play with in Sunday League, people like that, my mates, they go, you ain't going to make it. I go, I will. They went, you won't make it, mate. You're out all the time. You love it too much with your mates. You like being around your mates too much. You'll never make it. And then I did. And then, like I say, that conversation we had earlier about fans, you see things on social media, he ain't good enough. And then 3 months later, they're like, oh my God, he's unbelievable. He's our best player. Do you see what I mean? It's like, you see it.
Sometimes that can be your own fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was your own fans. That's what I mean. Like, your own fans are going, oh, like, say things and, oh, he ain't good enough at this level. Like, we need this player or that player, or you're playing and then they go, oh, we ain't doing this. And then you come out of the team and then suddenly it's like, oh, hang on, we need Danny Kebble back. Do you know what I mean? So it's until they've seen the other side of it, because in my career, I probably play more than what I don't. So when I do play and I don't score, all fours go for it. You don't score in a 3 or 4 or 5 games. And then suddenly it's like, oh, we should put him in it. Like, Dan's finished. He ain't good enough, blah, blah, blah. They come in. They don't score. Oh, I want him back. And then you go and score 5, 6 on the trot. It's just how forwards works. You go through that spurt of not scoring goals.
The longer you're out of the team, the better player you become in people's eyes. It's a funny one.
So it's mental, yeah.
I've got to know you, obviously, since you signed for Ebbsfleet over the last 4 years. And I was trying to sum up your time at Ebbsfleet really succinctly, and it's pretty much impossible. So I've just written it down as a list. So this is kind of your career in a nutshell at Ebbsfleet. So the manager who signed you was sacked before the end of that season. The next season, you lost a playoff final after you scored 2 penalties in the final and then missed one in the shootout. The next season, you came from behind to win a playoff final with 10 men. Then you came back, having stepped up to the National League, came back from the dead at Aldershot, won on penalties, then almost knocked out Tranmere at Prenton Park. This season, you've gone past 60 goals. Another manager's gone, one's come in. We've spoken about the late payments. The club's going through a major restructure. And now you've put yourself in a position to challenge for the playoffs again. It's just an incredible part of your career. How do you reflect on what's happened at Ebbsfleet?
Yeah, it's been a great journey. I have really enjoyed it, to be honest. And I've had different styles of managers, like you say. And like I say, I'm still scoring goals. That's the main thing. I'm like, sometimes I have to pinch myself. I'm like, yeah, I'm still going. I'm still scoring. I'm top goal scorer in the league. I've been, like, obviously the last 3 years, I think. 3 years, absolutely. I've been top goal scorer now. When Matt Godden went, got rid of him.
Sorry, Mike.
But to be fair, I've probably set up all his goals anyway. I think it was like 20. I have 25. I think I've set him up like 18 times that year. It was crazy.
He should have been more selfish, shouldn't he?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, got him a move, didn't I?
But 20 goals last season, which was the first time he'd done that for quite a few years. Like, you're on 12 already this season, so you're on course again. Yeah. And you say you just seem to find ways to adapt to different managers or different formations and different divisions and keep doing the business?
Yeah, like I say, I always, like I said earlier, no matter who tells me what I need to do or that, but I always work hard. And I think if you work hard and give you 110%, no matter what, my legs could be gone, but I will still try and run. I will still try and make that run. your war's always come. And I think the last few years I have found it more difficult because of my age. But I don't know, it's really weird. It's like, I should be finding it difficult, but I'm not. So I don't know what it is that...
Are you just doing little things differently? Do you kind of choose, you know, maybe when to make those runs or not to charge about quite as much?
I think now you're a bit older, I don't do the needless running. Right. Sometimes, like when I was probably younger or for 5-6 years ago, I'll just, the ball will be over there somewhere and I'll be running for it, no matter what, and I won't get near it, but I know I've tried to get there. As where now I'll just probably go...
Send someone else.
Oh yeah, send someone else, or just go, hang on a minute, just keep your position.
Yeah, weigh it up.
Weigh it up. And then if it comes near, then that's when you make the run. And so, like, so I'm using my brain a bit more. So when I get to, like, 70, 80 minutes, I've still got that bit of energy to that I can keep going. Like you say, like, 89th minute, I'm running back, tackling, so that little bit of energy is saved. So.
I mean, you spoke about social media, you know, coming to the fore now, but I guess sports science and that kind of side of things, I mean, have people sort of, you know, had you in the last few years and said, well, you've got to be eating this or you've got to be doing that to your body, or, and do you take any notice of it?
No, I don't. I literally, listen, I have never done weights and I'm probably one of the strongest around in our league. I've never done weights. I eat what I need to eat and look after myself that way. I don't do any protein shakes. I don't do any of that thing. I'm old school. Do you know what I mean? It's like these players nowadays, it's all about nutrition. And I think it's all about money, to be honest. If you eat right, properly, like fruits and things like that, and you're getting the right stuff in your body, you don't need all this. I don't believe in it myself. People do, but I just think it's a money spinner, to be honest.
Amazing, really, how the game's changed. And I mean, your stats, you know, back up the fact that you know, what you're doing works for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm running around still at 35. I train every day. I touch wood, I ain't had any injuries. So it ain't, obviously, like, I've had injuries, but like, I still play for them. Like little niggles and things like that. Obviously, I couldn't, my broken arm, but I just think it's. It's all like, I don't believe in it all. Like, even these heart monitor thingies they put on there, we had them last year. If I'm a manager, I can see if my player's running. Why do I need to see how much distance he's done? I don't get it. So, I mean, you know, if you're watching a game, if he's worked hard or he ain't. So, I don't believe in all that.
That's what Eddie Pennock said, wasn't it? I think that was one of these things that you was,
yeah. Yeah, I don't.
You can see it with your own eyes.
Don't need them to see how much distance you've run.
Mm. Going into management, do you see yourself doing it one day?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I run the scholars at Ebbsfleet now, and I do a bit of coaching there, and I run the youth section, and I really enjoy it. So it is something I want to do. But it's just make sure it's the right time as well. One day.
How is the academy going? Just tell people a bit about what's involved with that.
Yeah, it's very good. Obviously, we're building that new training facility, me and my partner Nathan Bullis, going down to K Sport, Fleet Leisure, building a new training facility there. So it's up and coming. There's nothing around there either. So to have something like that based is going to be obviously good for Gravesham Borough and around the Ebbsfleet area.
At what point did you think I could make a career out of playing football? When did that sort of penny drop almost? And then when did you start thinking as you progress through your playing days, when did the transition to go think, yeah, I could give some of my knowledge to youngsters, this coaching, I could get into this, or management, I could get into that. When do those things happen in your career?
Like I said earlier, the first time I actually thought I could make it was when I met my wife. She told me. Just needed that person. And so when I was like 21, 20, something like that. Can't remember how old I was. But that's when the penny dropped, and my, like I say, my performance was completely different. Felt fret, like it was really weird. And then the first move, obviously, I went to Welling from Herne Bay. Then I had two great seasons there. I think it was 24 and 28 that in 2 years, I think I had there. And then obviously went to Grays. But I think the Grays thing was the adapting of going full-time. Obviously, I ain't been full-time. And I found it a bit difficult getting into that that training every day, and it's obviously turning your life around. It's different. I used to go work and then go train in the evening, and then I'd have my other nights where I'd just play five-a-side, go and play little. So I used to play every day, but it was just different training and getting adapted to travelling over to Essex, coming back. It was just a completely different lifestyle, so I found it a bit tough. And then obviously Wimbledon come in and things, and then it just went off from there really. And Wimbledon, that's when I started realising actually I can make a good living out of this game. And like you say, the things with this training facility and obviously my scholars that we run is good, because I've been through the bad times and come out of the good times. I'm really enjoying my football now, that I can give that knowledge to them, because even now some of our scholars, they go off the board, you can just sell their game, but they've got ability. So it's good that I can say, they're like, come here, let me have a chat, and tell them the life that I had, where you could end up, or you want to end up like me, what I've done in my career, and I've had a good living. So yeah, it's good that way. It's good that now I can give my knowledge over to young boys that are involved in Ed's Fleet and the youth section.
I think we've probably only just scratched the surface, Dan, but it's fascinating, yeah, listening to you, and so many different facets and things that we haven't spoken about. You know, we must do it again sometime to get you back. But let's quickly round up the weekend's football action for our teams. We start with, start with one of your former teams. Most of them probably are, I would have thought, but please say stop when we get to a team that you haven't played for, if you don't mind. We'll start with Jules, of course, the 3-2 win at Burton in League One on Saturday. Late winner from Josh Rees. Jules were two up at half-time, let it slip, but got the 3 points. And their next game is at home to Walsall on Saturday. They're 17th in League One, 4 points above the drop zone, but only 4 points outside the top 10. What do you make of Jules? Dan, I mean, they've also got the FA Cup run at the minute as well.
Yes, they. I actually said on Saturday, them going to Burton after beating Cardiff, I just thought, you know what, that's a banker, Jill, and we're going to win. Like, it's just that momentum, that buzz of what they've got. And I'm sure they're going to get out of but obviously they were struggling it when they before Christmas. And obviously they had the great FA Cup win, but I think they'll get out of it and they'll be fine. They'll be up near mid table, I think, and they get a win Saturday. It's a home form, really, isn't it? They seem to be beating all the top sides, so Walsall being down there, I don't know. hopefully they can change that around and start beating the teams down near them.
Okay, on to National League action then. A break on Saturday for the FA Trophy, of course. Maidstone got through 1-0 against Oxford City. Their reward, if you want, is a trip to Salford in the next round. But Dover went out 2-1 to Harrogate. Both teams keen to focus on the league. Now Stones host Maidenhead on Tuesday, then Dagenham on Saturday, while Dover are at home to Bromley this weekend at Crabble. As we said, Ebbsfleet are ninth in the table, 3 points behind Harrogate, who occupy that last playoff spot. Obviously, last time out with the draw at Chesterfield that we spoke about at the top of the programme. But next up, home to Leighton Orient. I mean, you've already spoken about, but it's a cracking league, isn't it? I mean, Leighton Orient at home.
Yeah, and we've had a good break, and it's a great game to come back in. It's going to be a big crowd. They're being a big crowd, aren't they? But this is what football's about, and they're obviously they're top of the league, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's a good game to be in, and I'm quite looking forward to it, to be honest. This is what football's about, isn't it? You thrive off them, especially top of the league at home. And to be fair, I thought down their place, we absolutely tore them apart that day, I think, and we drew 1-1. So we owe them one.
I've got to say, that is the hottest I've ever been at a football game. It was a Tuesday night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
First week of the season, and at Orient, I don't know if you know, the press box is at the very top of that main stand. And behind it was some, I don't know, it must have been some industrial heater sort of thing, but it was just blowing out hot air like there was no tomorrow. We spent the 90 minutes absolutely dripping in sweat. Yeah. I've never experienced anything like it at a game of football, and it was a Tuesday night. I mean, it was during the heatwave in the summer, but yeah, it was so hot. But yeah, as you say, probably deserved to get that point in the end.
I think football was magnificent that night. The way we passed the ball and moved it was brilliant, and unfortunately, it's like that beginning of the season syndrome or something. Like, just nothing goes for you. Like, the last 2 years we've had it. So, yeah, it's a great game. Listen, Leighton Orient are a very good team. They're up there for a reason. And we just got to make sure that we do what we've been doing, and it'll be a cracking game.
And it's not just Orient. You've got all the top sides still coming to Stonebridge Road between now and the end of the season. It's a massive few months to look forward to, isn't it? Because you can, one, affect the title race, and two, give yourselves a real shot on being in the playoffs again.
Exactly. It could change around. It could change just like that, with a click. Because if we get all results at home, then you never know what happens.
And your home form under Gary's been near perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's... like I say, we've just got to keep doing what we're doing, go game by game, and we'll see where it takes us, really. We've just got to keep working hard as we're doing on the training field, and like you say, home performances, it's been magnificent lately, so yeah, can't wait.
Let's carry on into National League South. Dartford, Steve, I think this was the game that you saw, beat St Albans 3-2, Elliot Bradbrook with another super goal, and a brace for Phil Roberts. Darts are sixth, Welling are down to seventh. They didn't have a game this weekend. Dartford visit Chelmsford, and Welling are at home to Eastbourne. Quite a game at the weekend for Darts.
Well, after that game at Chesterfield, it was relatively calm and serene, but yeah, really good game actually, 2-2 at half time. Elliot Bradbrook, I've got to mention Andy Drury. I know he's a big fan of Elliot's, and he showed that he's still got it. Swirled on into the top corner from about 30 yards, and that got them up and running. Let St Albans back into it. Then Phil Roberts gets his first goal for the club, 2-1, and you think, right, here we go. They're up and they're in the lead. Conceded again before half-time, and both goals were avoidable, really. Second half a lot tighter, not as many chances, few set pieces, and then Phil Roberts, who they've recently brought in from Hemel Hempstead, come up with a cracking late goal, hooked it over the keeper, and a huge 3 points because it takes Dartford above St Albans and into the playoff places with more big games against the teams around them coming up.
Excellent. Bostic Premier at the weekend, we saw Alfie Paxman score twice for Folkestone, a 5-0 victory over Hornchurch. Invicta up to sixth place in the table, only goal difference keeping them out of the playoff places, and they visit Brightlingsea this weekend. Tunbridge, much needed 3-2 home victory against Kingstonian. They're down in 10th in the Bostic Prem, but 3 points off fifth place and only 5 points off second place. How tight that is at the top half of that division. And the Angels away to Bishop Stortford this Saturday. Margate were out a game, but they're down in 16th, and they they visit leaders Haringey this weekend, so they'll be hoping for a turn of fortune in that one. Biggest news in the Bostic South East in the last week has been the new boss at Sittingbourne, with Chris Lynch, who's the head of Dover's Youth Academy, taking charge down at Sittingbourne. A friendly was his first game against Hons and Blair at the weekend. His first proper game will be a trip to Ramsgate this Saturday. They're now under the stewardship of ex-Brickies boss Nick Davis, of course. Danny, one of your former clubs, Herne Bay, we spoke about them earlier. They climbed off the bottom of that division with a 7-2 win at Greenwich. 4 goals for Jake Embry in that one. I mean, do you follow your old teams much? I mean, I keep making a joke about you've got so many in Kent, do you keep a close eye on how they're doing?
I always have a look at the... To be fair, all Kent teams, to be honest. I have a little look, see how they all got on. It's a great win, isn't it? 7-2, to be bottom of the league and win 7-2. So I don't know what's happening there. It's a mental result.
Excellent stuff. In Southern Counties East, more than 500 watched Chatham come from 3-1 down with 13 minutes left to win 4-3 at Tunbridge Wells. The top six in that division all won, so Fisher continues to lead the way on goal difference from Corinthian. And then you've got Beckenham, Chatham, Sheppey and Cray Valley all waiting in close proximity should anyone slip up to take a full advantage. Danny, before we let you go, we have got a few quick-fire questions that hopefully won't take up too much time, but they'll be quite interesting answers. Steve, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, just wonder, first of all, who your toughest opponent has been over the years?
I would say when we played Stoke, Shawcroft. He was a different class.
Mm.
So I even scored in that game. So it was, but it was just the way... His brain, like everywhere I went, he just knew where that ball was going. It was weird. I couldn't. The ball's coming into me. He's there before I even got to him, and he was strong, good in the air. He had everything. Pass it. It was good to watch.
You must have thought you'd come off almost winning the battle then if you'd actually scored as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was just the way. It was just good at everything. I looked at him, and he was obviously in his prime then. He was one of the top. I think at that year. I think he was going to get a move somewhere, but he ended up staying, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just everything about him. He was strong, quick, good in the air, pass, diags. I was thinking, God, mate, I wonder why he played in the Prem. But, yeah, he was he's good. And I ain't really someone that I'll go turn around and go, he's had me out of the game. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, there's probably been one or two somewhere, but I'm not really, can't remember.
What about the best player that you've played with?
Probably two best finishers I've ever played with, John Main and Matt Godden. They're the best two finishers that I've played with. They were like frightening, weren't they?
Mm. And two people that you just seem really compatible with, good partnerships.
Yeah, just had good partnership. But Cody's up there, Cody McDonald, like my second year when he first, the first year in the thing, he runs and he's knowledge of the game, he knows where to be. He's up there as well. So them three, I'd say, have been the best three I've been with.
A couple about your current teammates at Ebbsfleet. Who's the best trainer?
Best trainer. It definitely ain't Andy Drury.
I was going to ask the worst, but there we go.
He just mucks about all the time. Probably Dean Rance, really. He's like, when he seems lazy off the pitch. He's like, just lazy, he's laid back, don't go to the gym really. But on when he's training, he's on it. He loves a tackle. He just rattles around. He works hard, to be honest. So I say probably Dean.
Yeah, I'd be pleased with that one. Who gets the most fines?
Corey Whiteley.
From what for?
Late. Not turning up. Overlaid.
Who's in charge of your music then on a match day?
We have two. So when we first get in there, before the team talk, Ashmore takes it. And then
what does he play?
He plays all that stuff, to be honest. Bit of banter, really. It's a bit all like old school and stuff like that. A bit of old house and stuff like that. So, and then after the team talk, Bushy takes over.
And just a final one. Have you got one, like a favourite ground, somewhere that you always scored or you always like playing at?
Dagenham, I think I score all the time against. I scored twice there for Gillingham and twice at Ebbsfleet last year and this year.
Yeah.
There's always teams that I score against, not grounds. Just there's always like Dagenham always scored, seems to score against. Eastleigh always seems to score against.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So our thanks then to Danny for coming in. As I said earlier, I mean, we've barely touched the surface of your career. I mean, you mentioned John Main just then, a great player again that we didn't speak about your partnership there at AFC Wimbledon, but so many things that we could talk about, and hopefully we'll have you back at some stage to maybe have a discussion in other areas as well. But really appreciate your time and absolutely fascinating discussion, Danny. Thanks very much indeed.
All right, thank you.
Thanks to everyone who's listened this week. Don't forget you can subscribe on Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with all the latest stories on our website at kentonline.co.uk.
The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.